30. Tell me about the last time you saw your daughter, Mr. Foreman.
I told you. It was in a beaten-up old car being driven north on the M1 between junctions 19 and 21.
We both know that's not possible, Mr. Foreman.
Do we?
You called your house at 6:13 p.m. You claim to have seen your daughter about 10 minutes before this, and yet we know that your wife and daughter were already dead by this point.
No.
He had shaken his head. The effort made it throb. A constant headache that had been festering for days. Pressure. All the pressure building up.
Why wouldn't they listen to him? They had got it wrong. All wrong.
Mr. Foreman, we appreciate how difficult this is.
No, you don't. You keep telling me that my wife and daughter are dead, but I saw her. My little girl is out there. There's been a mistake.
There is no mistake, Mr. Foreman. Now, can you tell us your whereabouts between 4 p.m. and 6 p.m. on the 11th of April?
Silence.
You didn't go into work that day, so where were you? We can track your mobile, so you might as well tell us. Where were you when your wife and daughter were murdered?
D.I. Maddock regarded him now with her pale, appraising gaze. Not an unattractive woman, but something about the insipid colour of her eyes, platinum hair and pale skin gave her a chill appearance. Like a stone angel, he thought. No soft edges or warmth. He could throw out the cliché about it being her job, but he suspected that her coolness had more to do with her personality than with her profession. He bet she even greeted her mother with a curt handshake.
"So," she said, "I was hoping you might have taken that camper van of yours, hopped onto a ferry and gone somewhere hot and sunny."
"Given up, you mean?"
"Moved on."
"I do move on. Every day."
She looked him up and down. "And how's that working out for you, Gabriel?" He shifted.
"I would have thought a knifing was a bit small time for you. Or have they downgraded you from homicide?"
"Nope. But some people I like to keep tabs on. When your name cropped up on the PNC, it was brought to my attention and I thought I'd make a personal visit."
"Gee, thanks."
"You're welcome." She took out a notebook. "So, what exactly happened?" He reached for the glass of water beside the bed and took a sip. His throat felt suddenly dry.
"I was attacked."
"In your camper van?"
"Yes."
"And your assailant ran off with your bag containing your laptop, is that right?"
"That's right."
"Can you describe your assailant?"
"Mid-twenties, short, stocky, wearing a police uniform."
"You're saying a police officer stabbed you?"
"No, I'm saying he was wearing a police uniform."
"Doesn't sound like your typical opportunist thief."
"I'm not sure he was."
"How do you mean?"
"I saw him in the cafe before the attack."
More note-taking. "Okay, I can ask some of the staff. They might remember him."
"What about CCTV?
"We're looking into that, but if this was planned, your assailant probably knows how to avoid being caught on camera." A keener look. "You think he targeted you?" "Why?" Gabe stared back at her. Because of what he had found. Because he had got too close to the truth. To Izzy. And he was pretty sure that if he said that, then D.I. Maddock would snap her notebook shut and walk out of here. On the other hand, what did he have to lose?
"I found something. Evidence that Izzy is alive."
The notebook remained open. For now. But he sensed the effort it was taking for her not to roll her eyes. "What evidence?"
"The car."
"You found the car? Where?"
"It had been dumped in a lake."
"So why didn't you call the police?"
"You never believed me before."
"Not true. We believed there was a car. We even had witnesses who saw a vehicle matching the description you gave driving erratically on the M1 that evening."
"So why didn't the driver come forward?"
"Maybe they were drunk. Maybe they didn't have tax, insurance. Could be any number of reasons. But the point is, it can't have been Izzy you saw in it. Just another little girl who looked like her."
Why dump it then?
Who knows? Maybe it was stolen. He felt the frustration rise, just like before. A feeling of helplessness, like a child trying to tell an adult that fairies really did exist. There were things in the car. A hair bobble just like Izzy's, a Bible with these strange passages underlined, and a notebook. It had something written in it. The other people. Her gaze became keener. The other people. You've heard the name. She continued to stare at him, evaluating. These items, she said slowly, I take it they were in the bag that was stolen?
Yes.
I see.
No, you don't.
That's why I was attacked. They wanted to destroy the evidence. A deep sigh, conveying a faint whiff of mints and a stronger whiff of skepticism.
What?
Gabe challenged. You think I'm making all of this up? That I attack myself? She didn't reply, and suddenly he was sure that that was exactly what she was thinking. He sank back onto the pillows.
For fuck's sake.
Okay, she said. Tell me where the car is, and I can at least get someone to tow it out of the lake. He hesitated. If he told her where the car was, they would find the body, and then they would ask why he hadn't mentioned the small matter of the decomposing corpse before.
I can't remember.
You can't remember?
No, not exactly.
You miraculously find the car you have been searching for 3 years, and you can't remember where exactly. He didn't reply. This time the notebook did snap shut. She shook her head.
Get some rest, Mr. Foreman. We've finished here.
No. He was close. So close to getting her to believe him. But he had nothing else. Except the photos. They were in his wallet, not his laptop bag. He still had the photos.
Wait!
His coat was slung over one of the plastic chairs. He swung his legs out of bed and reached for it, grimacing at the sudden hot burst of pain in his side.
There's something else. I have these.
He fumbled in his wallet, pulled out the photos and thrust them at her. She recoiled slightly.
Where did you get these?
He hesitated. Even though he was pretty sure that Harry was a lying son of a bitch, he didn't want to hand him to the police. Not yet.
I can't tell you.
Her lips thinned. Seems like there's a lot of stuff you can't tell me. Look, someone sent me the photos. I think they were trying to convince me Jenny and Izzy were dead. But they got it wrong. Because of the scratch. She squinted at the photos.
I don't see a scratch.
Exactly. That morning our cat scratched Izzy. But there's no scratch in this photo. The cat must have scratched her another morning. You're confused.
No, I'm not. I'm just sick of being called a liar.
No one is calling you a liar. Despite what you think, I am not your enemy.
You thought I was a murderer.
Actually, I never really thought that. It didn't work. To drive home, murder your wife and child, get yourself cleaned up, drive back along the motorway and call from the service station, miraculously avoiding all the traffic cameras. Not feasible. And then there was the anonymous caller. Gabe had thought about that, too. The call reporting a break-in at Gabe's house just before the murders. It wasn't a neighbour. The police had decided it must have been a concerned passerby, but why not come forward?
It was me thinking it was my honest face, he said now.
Never trust an honest face. A pause. Of course, if you'd just told us where you really were from the start, it would have made our jobs a lot easier.
And have you judged me for that, too?
You were judged by the court and sentenced.
Please, he said. Can't you just ask about the photographs? Check with the coroner or something? I mean, only Harry identified the bodies. It's just his word.
And you think he lied?
Maybe. Maybe he was mistaken.
You're suggesting that your father-in-law misidentified your wife and daughter's bodies?
No, just Izzy's.
Do you understand how insane that sounds?
Yes, absolutely.
Madoc picked up the photos again. She peered more closely at the one of Izzy. He waited, heart thumping. Finally, she turned to him.
Okay. I'll get someone to look at the photos, but first, where's the car?
Don't bullshit me.
He debated. He could lie, claim he just stumbled over it, say he never looked in the boot.
Barton Marsh, off Junction 14. There's a lay-by just past the farm. Follow the footpath till you get there.
She jotted it down.
Don't suppose you care to tell me how you found it?
No.
Fine.
She put the notebook back in her pocket and started to do the same with the photos.
Wait.
What?
He hesitated. The photos. They're all I've got. The only proof.
And you think I'm the sort of police officer who would misplace evidence?
No, but...
The but hung in the air, reverberating with accusation.
You have to trust someone at some point.
He debated with himself, then nodded.
Fine.
She tucked the photographs into her pocket.
Thank you.
Now, if I do this for you, can you do something for me?
What?
Think about what I said before. Siestas, sipping margaritas at sundown.
I'll think about it.
Good. Everyone deserves a second chance.
Even me.
Especially you.